Hello everyone, welcome to the Aztec Show. I am your very own host Shruti Sinha, and today with us we have Gaurav Mohanty, who is a writer, stand-up comic and an author. Hello, bhaiya.
Hi. Please just call me Gaurav. It's perfectly fine. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
The pleasure is all ours. So, aapko introduce karte vak, the first question that comes to my mind is first law, then a stand-up comic, and then author. So, what exactly are you trying to do?
I think I always had this whole Leonardo da Vinci fantasy in my head that I wanted to try every like venture that I could. You know, I remember when I was a kid, on my room door, I had, you know, there were these stick-ons where you could paste. So I had put a stick-on that Dr. Gaurav Mohanty, ACP, Director, MBA, FICCA, CA, all the degrees that I knew at that point of time, I'd pasted them. And I think that was a latent desire to always sample different things because you don't know which coffee flavor is your favorite unless you have tried everything.
Yeah.
So I think that was always there at the back of my head. But in my final year, I was very fortunate that I got a job very early on, like on day zero, but the first day of your fifth year. And how law school works is the last year is always scheduled for your internships, which luckily I didn't have to do anymore. I had a lot of time in my hand. And I'm a productivity maniac. I need to make sure that the hours and the seconds that pass by count.
We can see that.
Thank you. So I think that's where the whole writing journey started. I thought, okay, the Indian genre is missing something, which is the favorite genre that I like to, you know, lose myself in. So I thought, why not try something? You know, I never had a thought that this is going to turn into like a full-fledged book. I just wrote a chapter that metamorphosed over time and, you know, became this Sons of Darkness. Yeah.
So you ever had this thing ki, I want to write a book and it has to be something like this or something about?
I think I never thought of writing a book per se. I mean, I think all of us at some point of time think that our life is becoming too dramatic. Like Jeet from Jab We Met.
Yeah.
Kafi interesting ho gaya. Book to lagna chahiye uske. Jeet from Jab We Met. And ki it's too much excitement and this needs to be like part of some autobiography that will be very exciting for viewers to see.
Is it some kind of autobiography?
No, it's not.
Metaphorically
also. No, not at all. I mean, as a writer, I mean, I think there's a quote which goes in that when a kalakar is putting the best of himself or herself or themselves in a role, they split their personality and put different parts in different roles that they enact. I think the same goes for a writer. Since I have multiple characters that I'm writing, I kind of, you know, practice this whole multiple personality disorder, you know, where I'm like a serial killer who has different versions and different faces. And whenever I was writing from the perspective of one character, I used to step into their shoes so that my responses to situations that as a writer I came up with, let's say there's a situation and as what Gaurav would react as is not the same thing which Shakuni would react as because his experiences,
right,
his life journey is very different.
Completely different, yeah.
So I think that multiple personality disorder, serial killer trick really helped me, you know, canvas the multiple characters that are there in this book. So, but to come back to your original questions, I mean, we are going to keep diverting when keep asking these questions. But I never believed or envisioned that I would finish this book because it took me 4 years to write this book. And because I was balancing this with my law firm job, which is 10 to 10.
You wrote this while you were doing
while I was working, yes. So it was just a world that I used to escape to because as a lawyer, your life is very black and white. So this kind of added some color to it. So whenever I used to come back, it was, and it was like I was Thanos, you know, clicking my thumb and, you know, reimagining an entire universe. So, but once I started reaching the final chapters, I could see, okay, wait, there is something here. It might just work. And when I submitted the book to publishers, they kind of gave that validation that, hey, this will sell. So I think that's when I realized, okay, maybe I could be an author.
So were you an avid reader from the very childhood? Because you seem like a very, you know, vibrant personality and your choreograph is also very versatile, you know?
Right.
So were you an avid reader or any author that inspired you to write this?
Okay, two questions. Was I an avid reader? Absolutely. I think my mother played a big part in inculcating that habit from the very beginning that we used to have this tradition where she used to, and I was in Balasore then, so she used to buy Amar Chitra Katha books, which were these comics on Indian mythology.
We have something in common.
Oh, cheers. So she used to bring them and she used to make sure that I will read only one per week so that I don't exhaust all of them in one day. And I remember when she, her afternoon naps were very important and nobody could ever mess with my mother's afternoon nap. So when she used to be sleeping, I used to just quickly go to the drawing room, figure out where the locker is, where she has kept all these books and just consume all the books in one day. So I think that's where the reading habit started. And I remember stealing into her library and picking up books, which I was not supposed to pick up on. Like, I picked up Sidney Sheldon's Tell Me Your Dreams, which was way beyond my age at that point of time to read, because I was probably in standard 2 or standard 3. The whole idea of murder and serial killing was something which I had no idea.
Yeah.
But when I read those books, it was such a beautiful journey that the book took me through that I knew that I'm going to be a reader for life. Now, as to which author inspired me to write, it has to be George R.R. Martin. He's like my de facto Acharya Drona, you know. I don't know if anyone remembers the story of Eklavya, the idea that Dronacharya refused to teach him. So Eklavya practiced archery by creating a mold of Dronacharya and just practicing thinking, what would Dronacharya tell him? You know, obviously, I haven't met George R.R. Martin in real life. If I do, I'll pass out. I think he was the North Star which guided me in writing the book that I wanted to read. Because A Song of Ice and Fire, of which, I mean, which is popularly known as Game of Thrones, was the series which inspired me to write a similar kind of book in an Indian setting.
So, what exactly is the plot of this book? Like, not, you don't have to give it all away, little bit. Like, what exactly?
So, Sons of Darkness is a dark reimagination of this ancient epic folktale from the Mahabharata.
Okay.
You know, so Mahabharata has been recited in a narrative style of historical chapters. You know, okay, this happened. What I wanted to do was, I wanted to step into the shoes of characters who are traditionally perceived as evil. Because, see, no one ever thinks that they're a hero or villain in their story. Because everyone thinks they are right. You know, for some person, you might be a terrorist. For another person, you might be a freedom fighter. Right? And I loved that concept. I think ever since I started watching Gangs of Wasseypur, I really realized
that is one of my favorite
anti-hero
movies.
Culture,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think we all are anti-heroes in our own kind. Like, there is goodness in us. And there are also places where we have done actions which we think are great. But for the world, or the society, or your friends, or your family,
for some people, it's wrong.
It might not be the greatest thing which you have done. So, and I wanted to approach it from that perspective, because so far what had happened was Indian books, especially dealing with mythology, were going along this whole Gandhian line of, you know, black versus white.
Yeah.
And I wanted 50 Shades of Grey. So I took up these characters who I thought had very interesting facets to them and, you know, kind of put them in a reimagined ancient Indian world. See, what has happened is, and I'm sorry, this is Bhubaneswar Vaidya playing Misbehaving with my forehead. But what has happened is, because of colonialism, right, there has been this perception of ancient India in our myths as a place which is stuck in the age of veil. You know, huts, snake charmers.
The land of snake charmers.
Correct.
Yeah,
you know,
right,
that's been this whole racist colonial perspective that has always looked at India. Now, when you look at Greek mythology, whenever they are imagining Zeus or Poseidon or all the Greek gods,
it is hugely glorified all over the world,
you know,
not just in Greece.
As very six-pack abs and palaces and forts. And I don't know, like, we have come up with amazing concepts that Firang authors around the world are using to make their own movies and franchise. For example, Matrix is this amazing movie. And the entire concept of Matrix has been picked up from the concept of Maya in Vedic philosophy. Okay, we don't even have to go that far. Let's talk about Interstellar. Okay, Christopher Nolan's movie, where Matthew McConaughey was stuck in this planet called Miller's Planet, where 1 hour spent there was equal to 10 years back on Earth.
Yeah.
That is something which was amazing to the Firangs. And everyone, wow, what a beautiful concept. Gravity is working at such an amazing level. But ancient Indians had thought of this
way back.
Centuries ago, and they had put this in form of a story where a warrior had gone and was fighting for Indra. And once the war is over, Indra tells him, I'm sorry, you fought well for us. But, you know, 1 day that you have spent here is equal to 100 years back there. So your entire family, your entire kingdom is all gone. So it's amazing that we have thought of this concept way back and we have not, you know, shown it to the world or profited out of it or shown how glorious our ancient texts.
A lot of it was, you know, inundated away when the Britishers came to India.
Correct. I think because when they came, they started treating, so see, they colonized half the world. I mean, it's the truth. And they kind of became the deciders or arbitrators of what is cool and what is not, you know. And from that perspective, they decided that Greek classics, you know, be it the Iliad or the Odyssey, they are high literature and they will be taught in Oxford and Eton and all their Ivy League colleges. And Ivy is obviously an American concept, but basically the top premier colleges in UK. But when it came to Indian literature, they started, since they could not understand the Sanskrit language lost in translation and whatnot, they reduced it to heathens. You know, they thought of it as third tier literature.
Just because they couldn't decipher what was written and everything, they looked down upon our
literature. Exactly. Yeah. So because of that, they were very happy in burning a lot of our texts. And they gave the same treatment to the Chinese mythology as well. Like, there is an episode called as the burning of the Peking Palace, where they destroyed 1,000-year-old manuscripts because they didn't care about it, because they couldn't understand it. What you don't understand, you fear or you disdain. Yeah. So I think they went along those lines, and because of so many years of their subjugation, it kind of entered the psyche of national consciousness that, okay, you know, yes, Mahabharata is awesome, yes, Ramayana is awesome, but, you know, we will not deal with the magical aspects of it, because no, it shows as if it's stupid.
Yeah.
You know, even Amish's Immortals of Meluha, which is such a beautiful book.
And also his Ramachandra's.
Correct. All of those books and amazing stuff. But that book has tried to introduce a kind of science to justify certain aspects of the past, which was considered magic. Like, for example, Mahabharata has astras, which are these weapons that you fire, which carry nuclear power.
We compare it to atom bombs and nuclear.
Correct. But what he does is, he says, no, it's not that. It's just a simple arrow, which is great. It's one way of telling the story. But I've always believed that magic is nothing but unexplained science. You know, like if you ask our grandparents, if they could ever imagine a car that drives on its own, they will think that we're talking Hogwarts. You know, for them, Tesla would be magic. I'm so sorry. Yeah. And so I guess from that perspective, I wanted to build on that magic, you know. So in Sons of Darkness, there's an entire system where this assassin's apprentice is learning how to kill and murder people using yoga, chakras and mandalas, you know. I don't know if you've heard of the anime cartoon called Naruto. There's a lot of concept of chakras there where he invokes them and is able to ascend to a super level of power. That is completely the origin story of that lies in Indian philosophy, where we have 7 chakras in our body.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Thank you. So when you meditate and do penance, you can raise that Kundalini snake and it goes around your chakras until it reaches your crown chakra.
Yeah.
And then you ascend to a superior level. And that's amazing. So I wanted to use this to create this entire magic system so that India has its own Westeros or Hogwarts or Narnia. You know, so that's the whole idea with Sons of Darkness.
Coming back to the fun part.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, obviously, college mein, there is a lot of pressure, especially in law college.
Yeah.
But still, somehow we managed to have a lot of fun also. So, anything you want to share about your college that was fun or a little mischievous kind of?
I mean, I spent half of my nights wasted completely in bars and whatnot. So I was a very regular.
You know, a writer is always a sort of, you know, flims and melancholy. And
yeah, somehow I did not fit that writer cliche. I was very, to put it in the best terms possible, I was someone from the Slytherin house in Hogwarts.
Okay.
Like, I really enjoyed having a great time. And I knew that somehow I was always aware that college life is a very limited time period that you have to make the most out of a free and unburdened time, right? So, you know, planning to Goa, traveling outside, backpacking, trekking, going to parties, and just like having a great time with your friends. I think that was a very important thing for me, especially in the last 2 years of law school. I remember we used to maintain this something called record of attendance. It's a WhatsApp group which I have. I still have it, actually. So it's a group which our friends made just so that, see, what happens is when days are passing and if you're not recording it, they all get blurred in your memory.
Yeah, somewhere
I don't remember.
Yeah.
So what we did, that we started noting down. Like if on a day we have gone somewhere out and had a great time, or there's been a great memory, we used to note it down. Now what happened, that had two effects. One, obviously, that it got preserved, like as if it's a journal or a diary of our group. But most importantly, the days we did not fill anything, it kind of gave us that feeling, hey, 1 second. You know, we didn't meet. We are letting days pass by without actually doing something exactly. So I think that kind of really made sure that you know, we utilized each and every day of our college life as much as we could and just chilled and just had a great time. So,
okay. So, like any specific event that you did, like I came here telling my mother that I have tuitions and I'm going to the tuitions. But actually, I came here.
Right.
So, anything of that
I'm glad you're confessing this on camera, but go on.
Something very risky, you know, something risky like this where there is a fear of
Fear of getting caught. Yeah, I love that fear of getting caught. But I'm just wondering what all can I tell on camera and what I can't tell on camera, because whatever I'm getting right now is completely
NSFW. Is there something you did which you can't tell on camera?
Yeah, like a thousand things. Oh my entire diary can be called, my autobiography can be called NSFW. So I'm just figuring out what I can say which does not. Okay, actually, this is the fun story. I remember I went to Kashmir with my friend, and this was actually, and when we reached Kashmir, it became actually a troublesome period there because there was a lot of stone pelting going on army vehicles and whatnot. So when we came, we went to a trekking point, and when we returned, they had blocked the traffic. They said that we have to wait for 12 hours. And then only we can go to our resort. And our trekking resort was literally 15 minutes away from there. And we tried to convince them, but I understand, obviously, they could not let them pass because there was a danger that vehicles would be pelted at. But obviously, humse shaane, theek hai. So, my friend and I, the driver told us, the locals were allowed to go, not tourists. So, the local driver told us, ki aapna neeche se chale jao, cross the like river checkpoint and come up. Okay. And like idiot, okay, we thought this is a great idea. Okay, this will be like a memory to like live on. So
the adventures of Gaurav Mohanty.
Correct. And it started, and we decided to go, you know, and not realizing that if someone spots us, we'll be shot down by the Indian army. And it's not going to be the most glorious death. If Pakistani army shoots us, at least, you know, we'll be brought down back to our home with honors and probably an Indian flag.
Indian army.
Then to khatam ho gaya, na? So I remember we went there, and the car finally like crosses the checkpoint, and we're supposed to cross over there. Now we are waiting, and we can't see the car, and we're freaking out. I have the idea, let's capture this memory. So I turn around, I thought we'll take a picture. So I took a picture of my friend. And she's like, Gaurav, what are you doing? I'm like, just one picture, just to capture this memory. And I clicked the picture, the flash was on.
Shit.
Okay, and it flashed, and suddenly there was movement. I was like, fuck. And then we ran down again, and we crossed over, and the car was a little ahead. And we just got into it, and we just like really thought that the army is going to come at any point of time and escort us and, I don't know, put us in camps or something, but we survived.
Very life-threatening adventure.
Yeah. So that's definitely something where the fear of getting caught was more like fear of getting out alive. So, yeah.
So, I wanted to ask this very controversial question, which is in the media a lot nowadays. It's about the Shiv Shakti point that marks the point where the Chandrayaan 3's lander successfully landed on the lunar surface.
Right.
So India being a secular country, naming it Shiv Shakti is very, people are creating a lot of controversy surrounding it. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on it?
So India's secularism, as the constitution makers envisaged it, is something that means respect of all religions rather than, like, let me compare it with France's secularism concept, which means absence of any religion, right? So our idea has always been that each religion needs to be respected rather than be ignored. And, you know, as if we proceed as if they do not exist. So the idea that a point was named Shiv Shakti in isolation, to me, it does not look wrong. Because, I mean, it's not that it is a Hinduism-related concept. Because the whole idea of Shaivism and Shakti, which refers to the masculine energy in a person and the feminine energy in every person, is a yogic philosophy which predates even the rise
of Hinduism.
It is right from the Harappan civilization, these concepts have existed. But we can't look at things in isolation because this is real life. And given the rise of right-wing fundamentalism, which has kind of plagued the country, I think this was an opportunity for the government to kind of dispel such criticism by naming it something which could probably, maybe if they call it Akbar Point, for example, that would have really gone a long way in cleaning up India's image, which has been tarnished recently because of, the attacks on minorities and so on and so forth. But then again, when I look back, and let's look at the missile testing center, which is in Odisha, right?
Yeah.
Which is right off the coast of Chandipur,
yeah.
Which used to be called Wheeler Island, but now it is called Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam Island, which is a Muslim name. Right. So if you look at
nobody hates APJ Abdul Kalam.
Correct. Exactly.
Nobody
but it's still a Muslim name.
Yeah.
So in that sense, could we have taken a umbrage at the fact that, one second, why is this an Islamic name? So the fact that scientific names or points are named vis-a-vis religion, it itself is not an issue unless it's being done singularly just to glorify one religion. Right. I think the fact that this is named Shiv Shakti is awesome. You know, And if we again land in moon, I wish we name it something different. So that that kind of shows...
Something more neutral.
Correct. I think recently, just probably yesterday or day before yesterday, the four racers who kind of broke records by being one of the first Indian teams to break into the whole men's relay race. And they each were... Each of those runners in that relay race were of different religion. And I think that shows the beauty of India, that each of them belonged to a different religion and they all participated together. And because
relay race.
Correct. So because of each and each individual effort, we won. I think that's something which India is. That's what India's secularism stands for. So naming it Shiv Shakti itself is not an issue. But if that becomes a singular thing that we name everything this way, which only panders to one religion, I think that's a dark thought which would unsettle me.
Another question.
Yeah.
Don't you think that the minority religion is given a way more importance than the majority religion? I mean, people, keeping the religion aside, aren't we all humans? I mean, I understand the concept of unity and diversity, mm-hmm. but it is not very much practiced here. So what are your viewpoints on that?
So there's actually a psychological concept called narcissism of minor differences. What does this mean? It means that when people look alike, behave alike, eat alike, they get very obsessed with every tiny difference that differentiates both of them. And they start obsessing over it to such an extent that it becomes a big point of contention. Now, let's say if there were Germans staying amongst us, or if there were people from Australia or Africa, right? The point of dissension would be very less because we are completely carved out in the way we look, in the way we eat, in the way we are. But when you look at Indians, we are all South Asians at the end of the day. That's our origin point. We look very similar. We are very similar. So what happens is there is this tiny part in our brain that kind of really aggravates these differences and turns it very violent. So it starts from a very small thing. Like you can see it in very innocent examples where I'm an ICT student and I will say, hey, CBSE students,
yeah,
no can do, you know?
There is this concept of CBSE students,
correct.
ICT students, English.
So Bhubaneswar people will look down on Katak people. Katak people will look down on Bhubaneswar people. Then Eastern Odisha will look down on Western Odisha. Odisha will look down on Bengal. Like, you know, so at every level in the whole structure,
huge regional differences, and
correct.
People make fun of the other states as well, the other culture as well.
Yeah. So, if it's done in a humorous sense, which is not malicious in nature, it's fine. I think there's a sort of sense of humor which we should all inculcate.
Does not hurt anyone.
Correct. Right. But the thing is, when it comes to the question which you had asked, like, you know, there have been so many issues between religions and whatnot. I think they have always existed, but what has happened because of Twitter, because of social media, why am I singling on Twitter? Suddenly, each and every one of us has a voice, right? Earlier, everyone was scared to voice out their opinions because somewhere in the back of their head, they knew that this might be wrong or this might not be accepted by the society as a whole.
Condemned by the society,
correct.
Right.
But now what happens, a bunch of idiots speak out on Twitter and they find this echo chamber. Right? Where suddenly their views being resonated and echoed.
If one person says something, then any 2-3 people support them and then it just grows. Right.
So now their views are getting amplified and validated. So they think this is great. So very violent, aggressive views against different religion. Doesn't have to be minority. Minority against majority. Religion against religion. State against state. These views, which are so toxic in nature, are being celebrated in those echo chambers. So they're not able to know that this is wrong. Right? And I think that is the dark side of social media.
The validation that they
which
get,
you receive,
right?
Yeah.
That is
so you don't realize that, okay, one second, what voices you're amplifying, you're just making, you're basically a herd of jackals, you know, as compared to, but in their head, they're thinking they're lions.
Right.
So it's a perception difference. And again, this is my perception. They might think what views I'm espousing with my group of people and my friends and whatnot might be something similar, right? But I think the whole idea, and I think this is a situation which is not plaguing India itself. It's plaguing the United States, UK, everywhere the dissension lines have grown very strict and defined because of the fault lines that social media has created. Because as I said, each and every one of us has a voice right now. And there is no filter on it. We're not applying filters to what we want to say. I think that will change only as a whole mass movement where we kind of attach this filter saying that if I'm not able to say what I want to say to the person on their face, I should not say it on Twitter. I think that's the one thing which you kind of
It's a very commonly ka concept. Like, Twitter pe kuch bhi.
Exactly. So, you don't have to be keyboard warriors. You know, if you can actually say it out in front of the person, that means you should be able to say it on wherever you want as well. But if you're hiding from that, if you can't do that, and I think that means there is something wrong in that thought, which you know, but you are kind of... See, every man, every human being has an animal on the inside, Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Hyde concept. So I think we need to kind of make sure that we are human beings. The reason we have conquered over the other species in human beings, in the animal kingdom, is because of our superior intelligence. It's time we use it.
Do you think democracy is the best structure of government? Because we can see in Germany, when Hitler came, there was dictatorship, and Germany was facing a lot of economic problems in the background, but when Hitler came, it kind of sorted the problems. I'm not telling that he was a hero, but
I hope you aren't.
No, I have not. But he, under him, the Volkswagen company, it opened up the car. So I think him being a very violent personality, is keeping that aside, he was very much dedicated towards his country, what I feel. He just wanted to make Germany a established country in the world.
See, I think personally what my opinion is that when I look at world leaders, most of them, I don't feel that they are driven as much by the patriotic zeal as they show outwardly. It is more about what they look at, what they can mobilize, what they can capture on. Now, if you look at Hitler's background, he captured on the humiliation which Germany received at the end of World War I, where there were a lot of restrictions imposed on Germany, which completely crippled their economy. And that's why there was a lot of resentment amongst the German people, which Hitler abused and misused and rose to power. And when he rose to power, he rose at the cost of a big community of Jews, who were very rich, by the way. You know, so if you're saying the German economy developed, we might have to look at whether it was Volkswagen which really improved, or did the funds come from the families of people who were looted, right? So I don't think we can take that unidirectional approach. But coming to your original question as to which form of government is best, I think every form of government has its perks and cons, obviously. But I'm talking about India. I think this form of pseudo-democracy that we do have is the least worst of all options, you know, because we can see that if tyranny is allowed to come in, how
but
it can be.
But it's not like India has not seen dictatorship. Indira Gandhi was a dictator and she imposed emergency and everything.
And in a lot of ways, she also did a fantastic job at different aspects. But Indira Gandhi is a live example of how absolute power corrupts absolutely, you know, because using the absolute majority that she had in the parliament, she brought about amazing laws. She abolished princely tributes, which we were paying to all the kings and former rajas and former kings.
Decided to merge.
Correct, abolition of privy purses. So that was a great act. But then again, we see...
Also the war with Bangladesh.
Correct, you know. She did an amazing job in making sure, which gave us a lot of strategic advantage vis-a-vis Pakistan and Bangladesh. But we also see that power which she used so well, she completely misused it when it came to press freedom, right? So when you look at that dark period in Indian history, and also the dark period towards which we are slowly inching, it kind of shows that absolute power at the center is not something which is great for our country. I know we have a flawed democracy, but
every democracy is flawed.
Correct.
It has some merits and some demerits, right? Yeah. Democracy is flawed. Yeah.
Yeah, so democracy is flawed. Yeah, that's it.
Coming to your law background.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is this, there are a few cases I would like to discuss. One of them is some bizarre cases around the world. One of them is the McDonald's hot coffee lawsuit. Basically, a woman, she sued McDonald's because the coffee temperature which she was served was between 180 degree to 190 degree, and she got third degree burns when she spilled it on her lap, and around 6% of her body was covered with the scars.
Right.
And the general temperature is 140 to
130
to 140
degree. Yeah, they served the coffee very hot compared to what they should have served.
So, we will discuss the what the verdict was, but what do you think, according to you, should the verdict have been?
See, the thing,
if you were the judge,
if I were the judge, okay. Yes. See, US is a very different example from what Indian law is, because each state has a different law. Mm-hmm. Unlike India, which has one common law system, as in the same law will apply in Mumbai, the same law will apply in Bhubaneswar. They don't have a similar system. So obviously, depending on the law, the judge will have to take that into account. The second thing which we have to take into consideration is that when US is called to be the land of opportunity, the side meaning of that is it is also a land of lawsuits, because you can sue the person for anything and everything in under the sun. Now, when it comes to this particular aspect, when the coffee was served way hotter than what is prescribed, yes, there is negligence involved, right? So if I were a judge, I would see the attending circumstances, like, was this something which the user would have known, this is the temperature which I'm served and it fell, and did she suffer actually any injury, or is this a mischievous lawsuit? If she actually suffered third degree burns or second degree burns because of the hot coffee, then she should be compensated. Because if Starbucks or McDonald's has not been following the standard guidelines, so obviously they're required to, because it's a whole concept of product liability, where whenever you're manufacturing a product, any consequences from using it, especially when you're not adhered to what you say that you're adhering to, I think you should be held liable to a certain extent.
I think this is also common sense, you should not keep such a hot cup of coffee on your lap while driving a car. This is
correct. I agree with that. But let's, if you're looking at strictly from a tort perspective, and I think I'm deep dive too much into law in this one, so I'll keep it simple. Yes, she kept it, but there's a reasonable assumption in her that even if it falls, it won't burn her, because no matter how hot it is, it will be the hottest under the prescribed temperature. But clearly, this was, I think, 30 or 40 degrees more, which is a lot. So I can imagine that burn she must have suffered would have led her to file that lawsuit. So
the verdict was given that it was 20% her mistake,
mm-hmm.
and yet she was given compensation for the 30k burns.
I'm glad that the judge and I are on the same page.
Pretty much same. A man sued Budweiser for failing to help him attract beautiful women.
Right.
So basically, the people in America, we know they are very infamous for drinking a lot.
Yeah.
So this person saw this commercial on TV, where a lot of women, gorgeous, flirtatious women were involved. And every company does that, okay, to amplify their ads and everything. So he thought that if I consume a lot of this beer, I will also attract a lot of women.
Right.
And the court obviously dismissed his case. Mm-hmm. But what would you have done?
I mean, if this were allowed, anyone who's using Axe perfume in India will, like, definitely go up to the courts. All our perfume bad advice.
Not that dumb, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, okay. But if I were a judge, I'd obviously dismiss it, because, I mean, no reasonable person, strictly speaking from a legal perspective, can be expected that this is a genuine ad, that suddenly if you put perfumes, 25, 30 girls will start running after you. I think it's ridiculous. So yeah, I would have dismissed it. But I would have had fun with it at least. You know, I would definitely tortured Budweiser a little, saying that, what is this? How are you backing up your claim? Why are you putting this in?
It's also objectification of women.
So I think the way companies are now making sure that this is, like, stupid people don't really go after this, there's always this footnote in all these ads, which are basically disclaimers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I think it's very important for companies to use it.
But seeing it from a very serious perspective, don't you think the court already has so many cases which are untouched and everything? Even India has this issue of black justice, that justice is given, but justice delayed is justice denied, right? So isn't this burdening the court with much more stupider cases, which is just not...
See, one man's stupid is another man's injustice, okay? Because we don't know, we can't be the arbiter of what is wrong and what is right. Now, when you're comparing these kind of matters, this you won't find in India, because obviously the courts are so burdened, it takes 10 years for a case to solve. US does not have the same problem. There, the disputes get sorted out very fast, and the appellate mechanism is very stringent. As in, you can't go High Court, Supreme Court very easily, the way you can do it in India.
Right.
Right. So matters get sorted out at a very ground level. So from the burden perspective, US doesn't really have that much of a problem when it comes to this. So that's why they have a lot of stupid lawsuits. But the court cannot exercise the discretion at the very outset that I think this is stupid, it should not even come. It will dismiss it at the very first time when it hears it. But it has to give that opportunity, because it is true that justice delayed is justice denied. There's another proverb which says justice should not only be done, but should appear to be done. So,
okay, another last case is of Leonard versus PepsiCo.
Okay.
Where
I like how this is turning into like a mini crash course on law.
Where in 1999, Pepsi ran an advertisement in USA showing a teenager having like 70 lakh Pepsi points, and 70 lakh Pepsi points will give you a fighter jet kind of thing. So one person got 70 lakh points and everything, but fighter jet was denied to him.
Right.
Okay. So he went to the court and said that this is the breach of contract.
Right. So, I mean, can you blame the boy for daring to dream?
Right.
So actually, no, this, at least this is the case of something I know about, because this came on Netflix as well. And very interestingly, Pepsi had offered him $70,000 to, you know, walk away. But the adults around him told him to go on with the suit. And ultimately, the judge ruled that this is absolutely ridiculous. The guy who was there in the lawsuit, in the ad, can't even be expected to drive a car, let alone a fighter jet. So no reasonable person could have anticipated that this was a serious offer.
Right.
So it's true that this happened. But, you know, kudos to that boy. Clearly, he got a lot out of it. There's a Netflix show.
21 years old.
You know, so, I mean, at 21, we are all concerned about law school and what are the next assignment. And this guy is clearly dreaming big. So, you know, cheers to his ambition.
So, coming to the last segment, this is a fun segment where I will tell you a question and ask you a question.
Okay.
So, where you have to answer anything spontaneously that comes to your mind.
Right? Like a coffee with Karan rapid fire then. Okay. I'm going to assume a very aggressive
question. There is no winning or losing. You've already won.
Thank you. That is so sweet. Oh, no, there's still a lot of performance pressure to be in witty.
Okay. So, what do you want for your birthday?
A teleporter.
What's the worst combination with thumbs up?
Mango juice.
Anyone's poop smell good ever to you?
I have never smelled one.
Why do you think Siddhant is the stupidest person in this room?
He talks while I'm answering.
Do you think Gargi is stupider than Siddhant?
No.
Sons of Darkness in Hindi.
Wow. Andhere ke bache. Oh, yuck. That's not at all.
Who do you find the hottest in this room?
Satya brother.
What's your girlfriend doing right now?
I hope finding a way to be, because I have none.
Okay. Do you like this podcast?
Yeah, it's lovely.
How many exes your ex had? How many times you farted today?
Zero.
Okay. There's so many questions.
Oh, okay. Wow. I hope that went well.
You did really well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Thank you. Really. Sorry, Siddhant. I had to answer impromptu, so... Why? I had no idea we'll ask questions about people.
He is getting roasted everywhere,
okay.
Especially on WhatsApp by me. So,
apology. Satyavrat, I called you the hottest person in the room, by the way. This was no impromptu answer that came straight off my head.
Thank God I was. So, thank you for doing this podcast with us. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure having these questions. So, thank you for asking them.
So, like, share, and subscribe to the channel. See you next time.